Hello, and welcome to the Student Loan Planner podcast. Today, you've got myself, Meredith Jones, and Connor Pierce on the show. And we're going to talk about new grad strategies for student loans. And so, Connor, you actually came up with the idea for this one.
Yeah, so recent grads, new grads, I feel like there are so many strategies that you can take advantage to just minimize that impact of your student loans and ultimately live the life that you wanted to when you got into whatever profession you chose to take out student loans. So love working with new grads. It wasn't too long ago that I graduated from DPT school, actually, with student loans. So tried to figure out my situation, but love to figure out strategies for new grads. And so Meredith, let's talk a little bit about what happens when you get close to graduation, because a lot of people are getting close to that point. So you're about to walk, you're getting excited to finally walk across the stage, get that really expensive piece of art, as I've heard it referred to, which is a diploma. So what happens right before you graduate? So this thing called exit counseling. And exit counseling is a requirement by every university, college in the nation. And what it means is someone from usually the financial aid department at the university comes in and says, hey, everybody log on to your computer, make sure you can access your student loan, your studentaid.gov account, which is your FSA ID. And they say, make sure you select a plan. Now, the crazy part, and I know this from my experience and my wife as well, who had student loans, is it wasn't very memorable because you don't actually learn which plan should I be in. And there's a lot of confusion around, well, what's the best plan for me? So we're going to get into that a little bit. And let's talk about some of the main strategies, if we go real big picture, on how to pay off debt.
Yeah, so big picture, and if you've been following the Student Loan Planner podcast for a while, then you've probably heard these. The two main strategies are to either go really aggressive and just pay the debt off as soon as possible, and you're probably only going to do that if you have debt that is less than your income. And then we have the passive strategy. So that is folks who are going for forgiveness, either long-term forgiveness or people going for public service loan forgiveness. So the idea with that passive approach is that you're going to pay just the minimum payment that the government tells you that you have to pay based on your income.
And Meredith, so both of us, kind of funny enough, came to student loan counseling and financial advising as a second career. So we both racked up a bunch of debt getting a degree that we are not directly using right now. So why don't you share a little bit about your story and what you did when you were a recent grad?
My background is I'm a veterinarian, and so I practiced as an emergency veterinarian for a long time, like over 12 years. When I graduated back in 2008, things were a little bit different in the student loan world. My tuition was lower than a lot of veterinarians who are graduating today. My debt to income ratio was, I was actually in that category where it was on the low side as far as household debt to income ratio. And so I actually did take that aggressive approach and pay off student loans. Certainly most new grads that I talk to, whether they are veterinarians, dentists, physicians, any other profession, most folks who I talk to now who are new grads coming out of graduate school or professional school are actually going for forgiveness because tuition is quite a bit higher and the interest rates are quite a bit higher than what they used to be. And so how about your story? What sort of approach did you take to paying off student loans?
Yeah, and absolutely, you're totally right. With the price of tuition, we've seen a lot more people transitioning from that aggressive approach to maybe more of a passive approach, going for loan forgiveness. And even some of the new programs like the income-driven repayment programs, which have traditionally got more favorable over time, really have changed that. And so I graduated a little bit later than you. So I actually graduated with my doctorate of physical therapy along with my wife. We're kind of crazy, but we got married while we were in grad school as PTs. And that's where finances came into the picture. And we actually took an aggressive approach as well because we graduated dual income and dual PT debt. It made sense to pay aggressively based on our debt to income ratio. Crazy enough, though, most of you know there was this thing called a pandemic that showed up in 2020. And student loan rules changed massively from there until today. And they continue to change. Sometimes we joke, Meredith, it feels like it's on a weekly basis at times.
Yeah.
That the rules are just totally changing, if not monthly. So we changed our plan, actually, because we understood the options from paying aggressively to actually paying a more passive rate because the interest rates went to zero and there was no required payment. Then they came up with some new plans, like the SAVE plan that we're going to talk a little bit about today, the SAVE on a Valuable Education plan that was created by the Biden administration. We actually pivoted, switched our plan from what we were originally doing because we ran the numbers and found, hey, this is actually going to be more financially advantageous based on where we're at now.
Yeah. And that's the thing to keep in mind is that, you know, your specific situation is what is going to dictate your plan and your strategy. Your plan may not be the same as your classmates, your friends, your cousin, your mentor's plan, especially if they graduated a long time ago. So that's something else to keep in mind is everybody's situation is different. Even among your classmates, you may have undergrad debt and they may not, or you know, you may be married and they're not married. And so there's definitely a difference in strategy, even among classmates. Something to keep in mind as you are figuring out your student loan plan.
And that's something that we see all the time is we might have two people in the same profession with the same amount of debt, but they might actually choose different routes because of their future career, because of their future family decisions, because of how they even like feel about debt, because we love running the numbers and seeing that exact answer. And that's super important to understand. But then you have to kind of like take a step back and say, does this still make sense based on all those future decisions and be able to change as we go? Meredith, let's talk about one option, maybe not the best option, maybe not the ideal option as a new grad. What if you totally ignore those loans? So I've had a friend joke who said, you know, they can pry the money out of my rigor mortis hands. And I'm like, that's an option. He was just like, I'm never going to pay my loans. It's too much, whatever. And I don't think that's the best option maybe. But what happens if someone doesn't do anything?
So, and when I was thinking of doing nothing, I was just thinking of not choosing a plan versus versus the plan you're talking about, Connor, with a but yeah, let's say you do nothing and you don't choose a student loan plan. So what you're going to be defaulting into is the standard 10-year plan. If you graduated from veterinary school, dental school, medical school, any relatively expensive program, right? That standard 10-year payment could be $2,000 to $4,000 per month. A lot of new grads are not in a situation where a student loan payment like that makes sense. And so that's something to be aware of is that you are going to want to have an active role in actually choosing which repayment plan you're going to be on. The other thing to know is that when you graduate, what happens is your student loans, if you don't take any action, for example, to consolidate your loans, if you don't take any sort of action, then what happens is they go into a 6-month grace period. During that time, you don't have to pay anything on your loans. And so you have no payment, but one important thing to note is that you also, during that 6 months, if you don't take any sort of action and your loans are just in that grace period, you don't get any credit toward income-driven repayment or forgiveness or the public service loan forgiveness timeline if you're with an eligible employer. So that's really important to keep in mind. So what do we do to take our loans out of the grace period, Connor?
Yeah, and that's a legitimate option that is a really good strategy for some folks, especially if they know they're going to be pursuing either PSLF loan forgiveness or long-term forgiveness. And what you can do is, even though you're not required to make a payment during that 6-month grace period right after graduating, you could consolidate your loans. So let's define consolidation. So consolidation is when you take all your federal loans specifically and you lump them together into one big loan. So like when I graduated, 8 different loans, all different interest rates, different balances. If you consolidate, you take those 8, you put them into one loan. And what that's going to require you to do is 2 things primarily. It's going to require you to pay on that loan early, before that grace period is actually over. So they're going to process, they're going to lump all those loans into one, give you a weighted average of the interest rate, and they're actually going to round you up to the nearest 0.8%. So your interest rate will slightly be not quite as good, but the huge benefit is if you're going for loan forgiveness and you're working at a nonprofit, you can start getting credit for those payments prior to waiting that entire 6 months, where otherwise you would have 6 months of not making payments, but also not getting credit towards that loan forgiveness timeline. So important to understand, and we talked about the SAVE plan. So the SAVE plan is really unique too, because during that grace period, interest will actually still be accruing on some of those loans, the unsubsidized loans. But what happens if you enroll in the SAVE plan? The SAVE plan has a really specific thing called an interest subsidy. Depending on what your required payment is, Typically, there's interest that's collecting each month on your student loans, and you make your payment. And if your payment covers all the interest, then it starts going into the principal. That's generally how student loan repayment works. You have to pay through the interest, get to the principal. But if you're in an income-driven repayment plan like the SAVE plan, sometimes your payment doesn't actually cover all the interest that's collecting, which generally that's not a great thing because your loan will actually be growing over time because the interest is going to be accruing and your payment doesn't cover it. But the SAVE interest subsidy will actually allow you to, whatever your required payment is, which could be as low as $0, the government will subsidize, meaning they'll cover the extra balance beyond your required payment, so you don't have to watch that loan balance grow. So again, if you can take advantage of that strategy and potentially get a very low payment, sometimes as low as $0, which is what we're going to talk about next, you can actually have the government cover the rest of the interest. And if you have a $0 payment, the government covers all the interest, you effectively have a 0% loan, which is a pretty good deal, right?
Yeah, it's a very good deal. So how do you get a $0 payment? So if we think about it, so the last year that you were in school, if you're a student, you probably weren't making a whole lot of money. If you file a tax return just before graduation, since it's in April, let's say you graduate in May. So if you make sure that you have a tax return that you can refer to and say, okay, this is how much I made last year, even if it's $0, so you can actually file a tax return that says I made nothing last year. So with that tax return, you can use that once you take your loans out of the grace period by consolidating them. You can use that tax return and have your student loan payment be calculated based on that and actually get a $0 payment. Or let's say you had a summer job, but you didn't, you know, you made $20,000. You didn't make a whole lot. You would still probably have a $0 payment in that case. Married folks who their spouse has an income, maybe you'll have some sort of a payment, but it's still going to be a lot lower than your payment would be if it's based on your full income.
The goal when you're going for these long-term or PSLF forgiveness plans is, how do I pay the least amount possible, right? Like, that's why you're listening to this podcast, because you want to pay as little as you can towards those student loans and have more money in your pocket to do what you want. And this is just one really cool, unique option that really just recently came to light, that you can do this as a new grad and have the government cover a bunch of interest by taking advantage of that very low or potentially no income as a full-time student. But here's the really cool thing. So let's just do a quick scenario. What if you graduate in May? So a lot of folks are going to graduate in May. They're going to start working, getting jobs, maybe passing their board exams if that's part of your profession, and they're going to start working. So if they use a tax return from the prior year, they were probably a full-time student. So let's assume as a full-time student, you made $0 or anywhere really less than almost $33,000 as a single person in the SAVE plan. If you're under that threshold, which the vast majority of folks who are just about to graduate were, you can get that $0 payment. Now let's fast forward to the next year. If you graduated in May, you probably only worked about half of a year as far as the calendar year. So maybe you started your job in June and you worked through the rest of the year. So about 6-7 months of work. Now you only have half of an income. So the next year, which is a requirement, you have to recertify your income each year. You only have to pay based off half of your income. Again, assuming you're single and this is a strategy that you want to go for. So effectively, you can have a lower interest rate than what's on your actual student loan, studentaid.com balance, because you've taken advantage of the strategy. And I know for me, for most folks, this can be thousands to tens of thousands of dollars in interest that would have been working against you that now has essentially been eliminated because you understand how to take advantage of this.
Yeah. And the other thing, going back to consolidation, the other thing about consolidating soon after you graduate is that in order to consolidate, your loans are going to need to come out of the in-school deferment status, which is usually about 30 days after graduation. And so another thing about consolidating those loans, getting them out of the grace period early, hopefully having a $0 payment for your first year that actually counts toward the forgiveness timeline, ultimately, you'll be student debt free 6 months sooner than you otherwise would be.
So, Meredith, why don't you talk to us a little bit about how does someone get a lower payment? Like, let's say those 2 years have passed. So you've maximized, you've got that $0 payment for one, potentially even 2 years if you were to do something like file an extension for your taxes. And that gets a little bit more in depth about when you have to recertify your income, when you file your taxes. And you can even manipulate that to a degree to extend this $0 payment for a second year, potentially. But eventually, you're probably going to have to make payments on your loans, right? So what are some ways that a new grad can actually lower their student loan payment when they're making a full income and when they have to actually start paying on those loans?
Yeah. So a couple of ways to lower your student loan payment. And the best way to lower your student loan payment is really to reduce your adjusted gross income. And so that's the income that ends up being taxed. Anything that you can do that is a pre-tax deduction. So that's like investing in your 401k. So saving in your employer's retirement plan. There are some folks who may have access to a simple IRA instead of a 401k. There are some folks who might have access to a 403b instead of a 401k, but investing in those employer retirement plans on the pre-tax side is going to help reduce that adjusted gross income. It'll also reduce your tax burden and then also reduce your student loan payments because they're going to be calculated on an income-driven plan based on that lower amount of income.
And Meredith, go ahead and speak to, because this is a question I get all the time, is I'm a new grad. I heard contributing to a Roth IRA or a Roth account is the best thing you can do when you're young, because then you don't have to pay tax on it later. Tell me about how a Roth affects AGI.
Yeah, so good question, Connor, because contributing to a Roth does not affect your AGI. And so contributing to either a Roth 401k or 403b or a Roth IRA, while it might be a good idea to have as part of your financial plan, it is not going to reduce your adjusted gross income because those are post-tax dollars that you're putting into the Roth accounts. So on the student loan side, it's not going to help you, but ultimately for retirement, it can be certainly a good strategy.
Absolutely. And thanks for speaking to that, because we get that question all the time, or at least I do when you're doing a consult with a new grad, is I put a bunch of money in my Roth IRA and I'm like, oh, that's great, but it's not going to lower your student loan payment. So when you contribute to those pre-tax accounts, 401k, 403b, simple IRA, TSP, that can lower your income that's taxed that year and also lower your student loan payment. So it's like a double win in regards, whereas Roth IRAs can be great and depending on your situation, still could be the best choice. It's just not going to help you on the student loan side this year.
Yeah. And then another way that you can reduce your adjusted gross income is if you have access to a high deductible health plan, then you can contribute to a HSA, a health savings account. Those HSA contributions will also reduce your adjusted gross income. So Connor, we've talked quite a bit about the SAVE plan already. Let's also just make sure that we touch on that, you know, really your numbers are going to need to be run and you'll need to have some calculations done, whether it's on a student loan consultation or otherwise, because yeah, like SAVE has the interest subsidy, but then if you're going for long-term forgiveness, so especially the folks who are not going for a public service loan forgiveness, but going for that longer-term strategy, it might be less expensive long-term for them to go with new IBR. Do you have anything to add to that, Connor?
So it's great to get your lowest monthly payment. Like that feels good. It opens up a little bit of cash flow. As a new grad, we're usually cash strapped because you're not making as much as you will later in your career. And you've got these student loans that kicked in. So it's nice to have that lower payment. But again, when you talk about long-term forgiveness, it can be 20 years of payments, or it could potentially be 25 years of payments. And if you have grad school loans in the SAVE plan, you're going to be paying for 25 years. Now, as far as the income-driven repayment plans go, which there's four different ones, the SAVE plan is going to give you the lowest payment. So monthly, if you wanted to have the lowest payment, the SAVE plan is going to be the winner. But if you're going to be paying on that for 25 years, we have to weigh those pros and cons versus what if you're in a plan like the new IBR plan. Because the new IBR plan, although you have a little bit higher monthly payment, you're going to only pay for 20 years. So it's this trade-off of figuring out, okay, so a little bit less of a payment, a good interest subsidy if my payment isn't covering the interest, but now I'm paying for 25 years versus in the new IBR plan, you only have to pay for 20 years. Again, that's always the trade-off when we're talking to someone and we're looking at things. And another specific thing to the new IBR plan is you're only eligible for that plan if you borrowed after 2014, and specifically, it's July of 2014. So if you took out loans prior to July of 2014, you're not going to be eligible for that plan because of the way the laws were written. This is really a strategy for folks who took out loans for the first time after July of 2014, And now they have to make this decision of, do I stay in the SAVE plan? Do I go to the new IBR plan?
When we're doing student loan consults, that's one of the main things that we are talking with new grads about and running those scenarios and doing those calculations for them.
So we talked for a while here about loan forgiveness strategies, right? Let's get a lowest payment we can. Let's either ride this out for public service loan forgiveness after 10 years working full time, which is greater than 30 hours per week at a nonprofit employer. So you can go that route for 10 years. And that's a case where you want to get the lowest payment. You can go for 20 in new IBR or 25-year forgiveness in the SAVE plan, assuming you have grad school loans. Now, what if someone is listening to this, they're saying, well, that's great, but loan forgiveness, 20 or 25 years of dealing with these student loans does not sound super attractive to me. Are there other ways that people can pay off their loans a little bit faster?
Yeah, absolutely. There definitely are, but it's also not going to be for everybody. So if you have a really high debt to income ratio, then you're most likely going to be going for forgiveness, even if you hate debt, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's totally true. And like I shared my personal journey, but the loan repayment plans of before, the debt to income ratio almost had to be worse in order to make sense financially to go for a long-term forgiveness strategy. Because the percentage of your income that you have to pay in these income-driven repayment plans was a higher percentage. But now as some of these new plans have come out, it's actually that debt-to-income ratio has shifted to where some people who previously would have just paid it off, it actually can make sense financially to go for a long-term forgiveness strategy, which I think surprises a lot of folks. So let's talk about, okay, let's say you've made up your mind, I'm going to pay off this debt as fast as I can. Maybe you're like, I'm going to live on rice and beans in my parents' basement and just hammer these debts, which if that's you, that's okay. But how do you even maximize that strategy? Because there's ways that you can do it more effectively than others. And one of my favorites is what we call the save then payoff strategy. So the save then payoff strategy means you take advantage of that year or two where you can get a really low payment. The government is going to help you to subsidize the interest that's collecting. So your payment's lower and it's not working against you as much. So maybe you save that money that you would just be throwing at all of your debt so you can maximize the interest subsidy those first 2 years. Now you've got a lump sum and now you can transition to what's called a payoff strategy. So the two ways, you can forgiveness strategy or payoff strategy. And in the payoff strategy, it's treated like you just treat every other type of debt. So the faster you pay it off, the less the interest is collecting and working against you, and you pay it off faster. So you can still take advantage of this, save on the side, maybe even invest it in a high yield savings account, make a couple percent per year, and then you can start attacking it really aggressively. So can you speak to the debt avalanche and the debt snowball strategy, Meredith, and just kind of break that down of which strategy someone might choose to pay off really quickly?
Yeah. So between the debt snowball and the debt avalanche, so I always say it's psychology versus math. And so which one did you like better in college, right? So
I love that.
If you want to go with the one mathematically that's going to be the best, then that's going to be the debt avalanche strategy where you would say, okay, well, which one has the highest interest rate? And I'm going to pay that one off first. And then once I pay that one off, I'm going to take the money I was paying on that one and roll it to the one with the next highest interest rate until you're student debt free. With the debt snowball, so what you would do is you would put your loans in order of smallest to largest, and you would pay off the smallest loan first. That way you get that quick psychological win and you feel good about that. And then the money you were putting toward that smaller debt, you would then put toward the next smallest debt and pay it to zero. So those are the pay to zero strategies. But yeah, we do talk about putting that money into a high yield savings account, because if you end up going for forgiveness, like we always say, like we don't want anyone who is going for forgiveness to put any extra money toward the debt. So if we've got someone who is like, you know, hey, I'd rather pay off the loans, then we do talk about putting that money in a high yield savings account. And then that way it's not directly going to the student loans. And so you've got kind of almost like an insurance policy with building up that savings account, right? And so then if you end up needing to pivot your strategy, you haven't wasted a bunch of money putting it toward your student loans if you ultimately end up going for forgiveness instead.
Yeah. And if you throw extra money at your student loans, you're probably not going to get that back, right? So if the government, they've announced some different programs at different times, we're going to give everybody $10,000, or we're going to help people with economic hardship, or we're going to waive the interest. And these are all nice policies. None of them have gone through to this point. You know, maybe they could. It's not that they couldn't, but I think it's unlikely. But if that happens, if you've paid your loans to zero, you're not going to get that benefit. At least that's how they've always worked up to this point. So I think you could make a case, like you said, almost like an insurance plan of saying, you know, if I pay myself, there's a really low chance that the government is going to come and take that money. But if you pay your student loans, there's a very low chance that you're ever going to be able to get that money back. I think there's only been one time period, which was during the pandemic, where if you paid money towards your loans, there was a window where you could actually ask for that money back. But since then, that's not been the case. So important to know about that as well.
Yeah, because that's the number one mistake that I'll see people making, is throwing extra money toward their debt when they're ultimately going for forgiveness.
Yeah, the other really common and really a heartbreaking case is someone who refinances their loans when they lose all the federal student loan benefits and they think they can go for loan forgiveness.
Yeah.
That one hurts. And I've seen that case where someone thinks there may be, because they misunderstand these programs that are only available for federal student loans, like PSLF loan forgiveness. And they're like, hey, I've been at a PSLF qualified employer for 9 years. I'm going to get my loans forgiven. But then they say, oh, but I have private student loans. And that's just like, oh my gosh, I wish someone could have talked to you before this, because private loans do not qualify for loan forgiveness. They do not qualify for income-driven repayment plans. You have to pay that off like a traditional debt. So much less flexible. But let's talk about maybe one case where you would actually refinance your loans. So if you had a high interest rate on your student loans and you could go get a lower interest rate, dollars and cents wise, if you were just going to pay off this loan, that would be advantageous. But again, pause, read this thing called, it's called a promissory note. Or promissory note, not sure how to say that word appropriately. It's essentially the terms and agreements. So like, you want to read that, because every private company has different rules associated with that loan. Different things like, you know, is it a variable interest rate that could potentially balloon and go up a lot higher than what it is the moment you take it out? Is there a rule against paying it off quicker, because then they get more money from it? So really understand the pros and cons before you refinance to a private company. Not that no one should do that, but you have to be pretty confident you're going to go for a payoff strategy, because you're giving up loan forgiveness, income-driven repayment plans, all the flexibilities that the federal government offers, and you're trading that for a lower interest rate. So really understanding that is important.
For sure. Yeah. And I see folks all the time who get consolidation and refinancing mixed up. So let's chat through that a little bit, just especially since this is a new grad podcast. So when we're talking about consolidation, we're talking about keeping federal loans in the federal system. And so you're just taking a list of loans, you're consolidating them. In this case, with new grads, talking about taking it out of the grace period early. And so you're using that consolidation as a tool in order to be able to do that and have those payments toward income-driven repayment be counted toward the forgiveness timeline. So consolidation is federal. And then refinancing is where you're taking federal loans or private loans, and you are refinancing them to get a lower interest rate is the most common reason to do that. Once you refinance, they are in the private system, so they are no longer eligible, as you said, for income-driven repayment plans or forgiveness. So it's really important to know the difference between those two. And so the most common reason that someone would refinance right now, because the interest rates on refinancing are not great right now. So the most common reason that you would probably do that is if you have private student loans that are at a high interest rate. If you've got private loans, you're going to want to prioritize those first, because of course they're not eligible for the federal programs and they are usually going to be at a higher interest rate anyway. Oh, other thing that I'll throw in there about refinancing private student loans is that, yeah, you would want to do it if you could get a lower interest rate, but sometimes you need to have 2 years of employment history in order to actually get approved for that refinance.
And that's something to be careful of too. And again, this is a whole separate discussion that we won't cover a lot here today, but sometimes people will get a cosigner. It's important to know if someone's a cosigner on that loan that they are now attached to it. And whatever you do, make payments or don't make payments, that will also directly impact maybe a parent or someone who co-signs on that loan, would be the other way that you could consider. But again, everything's a trade-off, right? Like if you're taking your loans, you're refinancing them, you're going to get a different term, you're going to get a different end product. And that's a one-way ticket. There's no undo button once you refinance. So just be sure about what you're doing so you can make the best decision for your future. As you talk about a new grad, one thing you're going to come across is you're going to get a job, right? It's like, finally, I can actually work and start making money instead of going the other direction. So let's talk a little bit about employer student loan benefits, because this is becoming a more of a hot topic. I think the percentages were pretty low of employers who actually offered things like a direct repayment to your student loans or maybe gave you a bonus. And those are two different things. So would you just want to talk through a little bit, Meredith, about if you're looking at a job and an employer says, hey, I have a student loan repayment benefit, like what are maybe some questions they should ask? What are some things that they should be saying? Okay, like how do I know if this is a game changer for me or maybe not?
So whether you get a student loan consult or whether you're running these numbers on your own, one of the things you're going to want to know is, okay, what is going to be my repayment strategy? Because if your repayment strategy is that you've got a low debt to income ratio and you're going to pay the loans off in full, you're probably going to look at a student loan benefit a little bit differently than if you're ultimately going for forgiveness and you only have federal loans. So a lot of people are in that category. If you're going for forgiveness, one of the questions that you would want to ask your employer is, okay, the money that you're offering me for a student loan benefit, is it tax-free? Because if it's not tax-free, and the way that tax-free could happen is generally as part of the CARES Act, there is a $5,250 per year tax-free credit that some employers are eligible to get and then offer that to you as a benefit. So you'd want to know, is that money going to be tax-free or not? Because if it's not going to be tax-free, then you're getting a benefit that is really not going to be treated any differently than income. And then it's going to be considered income, and it's actually going to have the potential to increase your required student loan payment under income-driven repayment. So it may not ultimately help you if it's not tax-free.
And just a personal example from that is, again, when my wife graduated, the company that she worked for did offer a student loan repayment benefit. So an example of one is for 4 years, if you worked for the full year, you got $6,000 in a lump sum, like on your work anniversary. And the funny part is her work anniversary happened to be our actual anniversary. So we used to joke it's anniversary money. So it was always fun when that paycheck came because she'd get a $6,000 paycheck into her bank account. Well, guess what? That $6,000 was actually less than $4,000 when it actually hit the checking account because, again, it was taxed. So it wasn't $6,000 equals $6,000. But the interesting thing was at her employer, they didn't actually check if you used it for student loans or not. So it was labeled as a student loan repayment benefit for those first 4 years, as long as you stayed the whole time. But it wasn't actually checked. So we could have used that for really whatever we want, even though it was deemed a student loan benefit, versus sometimes other employers will say, hey, prove to me that you have student loans, send me your information, and we'll check it. Then you get the student loan benefit. But even other ones are going as far as to saying, hey, we're going to make the direct payment for you. And that's in association with that 5250 that you talked about that employers can directly contribute. And the cool thing with that is it doesn't show up on your taxes, so you don't have to pay the tax on it, and it goes directly towards the loan. The downfall to that potentially is, what if you don't need extra payments? So talk about, is this a really good benefit if you're going for loan forgiveness, or maybe not?
Probably not. So if you're going to go for forgiveness, then really this benefit ultimately doesn't help you all that much. So at most, it might help you with just making your student loan payment for you. At worst, it may not benefit you at all. And the other thing, and when I talk to veterinary students and other groups of students, I'll tell them, don't choose an employer based on this benefit, because one, it may not really ultimately help you, but then also the benefit under the CARES Act is set to expire at the end of 2025. So I wouldn't choose a benefit based on something that's going to expire at the end of next year. And really what you could negotiate instead is, I mean, if they're willing to give you another $5,000, like why not just have $5,000 pay increase negotiated that would actually hang around long-term for you?
Absolutely. And that could be a whole nother podcast, right? Negotiating and making sure you understand. So again, plug for just understanding finances. There's a direct correlation between understanding your student loans and how much you ultimately pay on your student loans versus taking advantage of some of these strategies. Understanding your work benefits right from the start, things like employer matches, student loan benefits, how PTO works, all those different things. If you can figure it out early on, it can be truly game-changing as you move forward. And it's also going to put kind of the ball on your court to say, oh, that's awesome. They offer a student loan repayment benefit. Well, let's dig into the details. Let's figure out exactly how this is going to help me. And it might be a win-win for your employer. Maybe they say, hey, we'll give $50,250 towards your student loans directly. But maybe you can have a conversation and say, well, actually, you know, that doesn't help me as much because I'm going for loan forgiveness. Can we negotiate and maybe meet in the middle? And maybe it's a win for your employer, saving them money, and also a win for you because the money is going to a place where you can use it more effectively. So don't be afraid to have that conversation. But first, before you have the conversation, you certainly need to understand how it all works so you can make it a win-win.
Yeah. And then the other thing as a new grad to keep in mind as you're getting that first job, I mean, you get your first paycheck. And so Connor already touched on this is, okay, you get your paycheck, but you don't get to keep all of it because of taxes, right? Yeah. And so it's like, okay, you know, on one hand, I thought I was going to be bringing this home and then, you know, taxes come into play, but then you still feel like you're rich, right? Because you're still bringing in so much more money than what you were bringing in as a student, right?
Right. It's all relative. Yeah.
Yeah. And so definitely one of the things that we talk about just keeping in mind as you're making that transition from student to working out in the real world is lifestyle creep. And so lifestyle creep is where you get a new job or you get a raise or you get a bonus. And there's a tendency to just want to go out and spend it all, right? Because you worked hard for this and, you know, you're just going to increase your lifestyle along with your pay, right? And so that's something to definitely keep an eye on and make sure that, like, celebrate a little bit, like live a little, right? But then also make sure that you are setting yourself up for long-term financial success as well.
Yeah, it's really important to find that sweet spot, right? Of like, if you live on nothing your whole life, like, yeah, you're going to become rich, but maybe there were things that you could have done along the way that would have made your life maybe a little bit more fun. And not that you need a ton of money to have fun, but like the other end of the spectrum is you're spending everything quicker than it comes in, and then you can get yourself in trouble. So finding that sweet spot is super important to say, hey, I'm handling my student debt. I'm handling investing for my future. I'm living a life that I enjoy. And that's really important. So kind of the last piece of encouragement I'll give you is don't let your student debt totally control your life. So I'm going to put on like my dad moment right here. I have a 3 and a 1-year-old. Like, don't let it define you. Like, allow yourself to work a job that you love and do what you love and figure out your student debt plan that supports that, not the other way around. Because sometimes people think I'm trapped by my student loan. I'm burdened by my student loans and I have to do X. I have to fill in the blank. And maybe that's not the case, because when you understand all these different options, maybe you can actually still have that lifestyle that you want. And you can still figure out the student loans and it doesn't have to impact you so negatively. So if you want student loan advice specific to your situation, you can go to studentloanplanner.com/book and you can book a consult with either Meredith, myself, or one of our other team members and really just get you on the right track moving forward. So thanks everybody for listening and have a great week.